Howdy, folks. This week, we're reaching into our saddlebags for an episode that was recorded a couple months ago, where our host, Sean Watson, talks with patron Robin Koss, and they discuss beating their opponents black and blue using the colors black and blue. Yes, this is the Pandemir Alliance episode. This was recorded before the Brexit vote, so at the time, the United Kingdom was still united and their Demir Alliance, it was totally pan-European. But to the rest of our Patreon supporters, we thank you kindly. Take it away, Sean Watson.
Clear throat, lemon face, lion face.
Lemon face.
Lion face.
Lemon face.
Lion face.
You Brits are so silly.
Well, okay, so I'm Sean Watson, and only I am Commanderin. Music, 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 music. Mandarin. Hey listeners, thanks for listening. And I know what you're thinking. Where one podcast arises, two will fall. Yep, I'm on my own this week, listeners. Or am I? We have a guest on the show this week, but we'll get to him in a second. So I'd like to remind you all, we focus on the topics the community wants to hear about, and we talk to some interesting people along the way, but never ever talk about three banned topics. That is religion, politics, and Hearthstone. You can find us on all the usual social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, etc., etc., etc. But this week, we have a wonderful show lined up for you with our guest, Mr. Robin Koss. Hello, Robin.
Hello, sir, and thank you so much for having me.
Ah, my pleasure. Now, those of you who are used to me being polite at home will notice that Robin is even politer because he's from the politest nation on earth.
It might be.
The home of beautiful women and strong alcohol. Sweden.
Yeah, that's very true. And also IKEA, meatballs, and everything else. Stereotypical you might have heard of along the way.
I presume you're talking to me right now from a flat pack computer?
Yeah, basically. In a flat pack room. In a flat pack house, almost.
Yes, with blonde-haired, blue-eyed children staring on, frolicking in the snow.
I actually do have blonde hair and blue eyes, but we'll see about the children later on.
I'm to understand you're about to birth your own blonde-haired, blue-eyed child yourself, Robin.
Yeah, a small human token, I'm hoping for. At least we're hoping so, my wife and I.
Ah, well, good luck to that, good luck to that. And listeners, if you can think of any interesting magic-related names for Robin, I'm sure in a very legally binding way he will adhere to that, so tweet them over to us. So the only news this week is why we record. GPLA is currently underway. So Nate and Phil are out there recording a lot of stuff with listeners and players and checking out the casual scene around the side of the tournament. And rumour is it, Phil is actually playing Modern. Robin.
Oh my, why would he do that?
Well, if you ask him, he'll tell you it's so he can, GPLA is a modern GP, he'll tell you it's for his free Stoneforge Mystic and playmat that he'll get, but I think he's got a secret plan to take down the whole modern scene with his Zardahedron Grinder deck,
which... his 100 card singleton Zardahedron Grinder deck, perhaps?
I hope so. And his opponent just looks confused across the table when he starts taking Zarda out and setting it in front of his deck.
To be honest, if I lost to that in Modern, I'd probably just go home and never play Magic again. Not that I would ever play Modern.
No.
To be clear.
Quite frankly, Modern.
You will bleep that, right, sir? Family.
What's the Swedish word for bleep?
The actual or this the sound?
the sound. Sound.
I think toot is quite quite close.
So give us a toot.
Toot. feel free to use that in the future as well.
So, Robin Cass, a lot of our listeners won't know who you are. Some of them will know you from playing with our deck testing group and talking to you on our Patreon chat channel. So, tell us a little bit about yourself and your time in Magic.
I suppose I started playing like many of us in secondary school. I guess it's called in English, I suppose. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, secondary school is correct. High school for you American listeners.
Yeah, early teens, more or less. We played for quite some time on the cafeteria tables. No sleeves, no anything. Just for fun, basically. And then we actually got into vintage out of all formats, my friends and I. But we called it Type 1 back then, because I live quite close to Gothenburg in Sweden, and Gothenburg used to be like the vintage capital of Sweden, it's called.
Do Swedish teenagers have a massive excess of spare cash just kicking around?
No, but this was back when you could actually play like a deck with all blue fetch lands, blue duels, Force of Wills, and you can still call it budget because they were that expensive back in the day. I started around Ursa Block or Mercadian Masks, perhaps. It might have been the newest set, I don't really recall. And then we moved on to Legacy, my friends and I, when that became a thing, like 2007, I suppose it was. And since around 2011, I think we started to play Commander with the first pre-constructed decks, whatever they were called.
The very first ones are Commander 2013?
No, I think it's 2011, the first ones.
Oh, yeah, 2011, then Arsenal,
yeah,
wasn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. Mm. And last year, I more or less just stopped playing Legacy because there aren't that many tournaments around here. And with the wife and with the family and everything, I can't go to tournaments to the extent that I used to be able to when I was single and living the free Magic life, so to speak. So now I just play a Commander with my local paper group, and it's the same people who I played with on these cafeteria tables all those years ago. So basically known all the guys for over 10 years, and to me that's the best form of Magic, when it's basically keeping up with your friends and having a good time, not really competing or anything, just as a social game. That's the best part for me.
So me and you were forged in very similar fires, Robin. I had a couple of packs from the Dark and Legends and stuff, but Urza's Block when I was a teenager was what I very first sort of dug my teeth into. So I'd be interested to know, what was your first deck that you remembered brewing?
I remember building like a mono blue Flyers deck, a tempo deck. It was almost a tempo deck, lots of boomerangs and unsummons and counter spells and flying creatures. And my younger brother, he countered it by building a mono green spider deck with a bunch of reach creatures that was bigger than mine. So I hated facing him in the local tournaments, but I loved playing it against the other guys. It was pretty fun, actually.
So very early doors, you found yourself fighting a what we call a morphing meta,
yeah.
Or an evolving meta, yeah.
Toot.
Damn it. I remember my first deck in that block was all about Gilded Drakes, and Visions were still in that block, so Mana Walls to bounce the Drakes back.
Yeah.
And just stealing everyone's stuff, and it's not really changed for me.
Seems pretty mean, actually.
Yeah, I had a Winter Orb stacks deck that used Colossus of Sardia and untapped it using a Voltaic Key.
Ah.
And Sky Diamonds and lots of Mana Rocks to keep my mana base going. And back in the day, listeners, if you tapped your what they called a mono artifact, for example, your Winter Orb, it switched the Winter Orb off. So what Winter Orb does is that each player can only untap one land per turn, but you tap your Winter Orb using Icy Manipulator or something, or Ring of Gix. There's various ways of doing it in your opponent's end step, which meant it wasn't switched on during your turn, so you could untap all your land. And then you use stasis to mean that no one ever got an untapped step other than you. It was really, really mean, and one of the first iterations of stacks.
You can actually do this in Commander almost, because you can just play Winter Orb and a bunch of Mana Rocks, and everybody will hate you, but you will probably win in a game where you get that going.
You'll win very slowly.
Yeah, which is the best way of winning in my book, actually.
Well, that's weird because we normally have Nate and Phil on the show that play... well, Nate will try and get the kill as efficiently as possible, and Phil will get the kill in the most fun way as possible. Mm-hmm. But I think of our online meta that we play in, me and you are probably the closest to spikes we really have.
I used to be a spike. Like, I used to identify with this, with being a spike really hard, but only in the older formats. I've never been into standard, really, or even drafting that much. Some blocks, yes, but others, no, really. So I might be a spike in truth, but when it comes to Commander, I try to be less spiky, I suppose, because it tends to bring the table against you, and that's hard for winning.
Yeah, I think one of the skills in Commander, and this is something that Jason Ault of Jason E. Ault Brainstorm Brewery fame was mentioning when he was recently a guest on the Commander's Brew podcast. One of the great skills in Commander is being able to control a game and win the game, but at the same time socially engineering it. So you're doing it through politics, and your deck isn't just going, oh, look, I've won on turn four, yay. So everyone's enjoying the game, but you're still getting the win out of it by keeping that table at the pace you want.
Yeah, I have a friend in my paper meta who tends to switch his decks whenever one of his decks has like this amazing victory against a table. Like turn three, Wyrmcoil Engine with haste tends to like, yeah, I'm going to just put this aside for now and play something else. Just so you don't all hate me for the next month or so.
He's probably more sensible than me then, because I'll soak up the hate. So, Robin, Robin, you don't just play Magic, do you? You write about Magic as well.
Yeah, I do. I have this little blog that I write with my friends. Well, mostly me doing the writing. You can find it on goifwars.wordpress.com from Tarma Goif, because there's this fun situation that happens a lot in Legacy when two Tarma Goif decks face each other, and Tarma Goifs are always the same size. So if both players have a Tarma Goif each, nobody can really do anything. If they're 3/4s or 4/5s or 5/6s, it doesn't really matter. They just bro fist each other until the cow come home. So so what you want to do is try and find some removal as quick as possible. But I thought that was a funny situation that often came up, because I always played like tempo decks in Legacy as well. Rug Delver, if you know what that means. Bug Delver, if you know what that means. Canadian Threshold and Team America are the names that I go by, but it's the same decks. And they're both very Tarma Goif decks, and use it as their main win condition. So I was often looking at other Tarma Goifs. So I made a banner of two Tarma Goifs facing each other, and I named the blog Goif Wars to commemorate the Tarma Goif bro fisting.
What sort of things do you talk about? I mean, I read it, so I know, but just in case our listeners haven't been over to your blog, what sort of things do you talk about?
The reason I started it was I was writing quite high-level Legacy intricate strategy articles, how to brainstorm for 1,000 words, basically. But I had written some of those articles for another site before that, so I was just moving on to writing something where I can publish every day or how often I wanted without some publisher trying to axe part of my article. So I just wanted an outlet for all my creative juices, basically. But since I, as a Magic player, have moved towards a more casual commander format based Magic life, so as the blog, so these days most of the stuff on the blog are commander related, if not all of them. I often look at new spoilers whenever a new set comes out, and look at how good or bad was it being in commander, especially the legendary creatures, of course, are quite interesting for the blog. And then I have a guy doing some videos from Magic Online, and I also have another guy who is writing our local comic strip. And both of those guys are actually players in my local paper meta as well. So we talk a lot about the blog and so outside of the blog itself.
And the blog is written in English or Swedish?
In English, obviously.
It is. But to any of you worried, hang on, I don't speak Swedish. No, it's all in English. It's very, very good. I highly recommend checking it out. Just give us the name of the URL for that again, Robin.
Right, it's Goifwars, GOYFWARS in one word, .wordpress.com.
Cool, go check that out. So well, you mentioned there you review spoilers and cards from new sets. What was your favorite Commander-related card from Shadows over Innistrad then?
It used to be the Gitrog Monster, and I still very much believe in the Gitrog God, but everybody jumped on that bandwagon, so it really just failed to brew my deck completely. I just left it because it was too mainstream for me.
So what is it now?
That's a very good question. I quite like Odric, actually. Not necessarily as a commander, but as part of the 99. I think it's a pretty good card for white, because he has like the so much potential in one card, but he looks rather innocent when you drop him. So I'm not really putting him into any decks right now, but I'm looking into adding him to a new thing I'm brewing.
Have you played Nate's Odric deck yet?
I haven't. I've played, maybe it was Dean who was playing an Odric deck. No, it was Hunter from the playtest group who was playing Odric. I've never met Nate's deck yet. I heard it's pretty good though, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I've not played it either, but I've heard only terrifying things.
Yeah,
but, you know,
everybody is attacking with double strike and death crush and indestructible and everything. So basically, you can't win that combat.
Hey, Mono White's finally got the commander it deserves. But yeah, so I missed our review show because I was busy sorting out life for Shadows of Innistrad. And the card that no one has been talking about, but it has been sensational in every game I've used it from Shadows, is Behold the Beyond.
I don't know what that card does even.
That is... Oh, I can tell you so. It's 5/2 black for a sorcery. You discard your hand, then tutor for 3 cards.
Wow. Is that good, though? I mean, you discard your hand. Why would you want to do that?
Yeah, there's no it's no strategies in black where discarding your hand is a beneficial thing, is there?
Yeah. Heard so, too.
Yeah, so, I mean, discard your hand, tutor up, I don't know, Rise of the Dark Realms, Living Death, a billion other things. It's just... phenomenal card. And you think, well, 7 mana is quite a lot. People are paying 5 mana followed by 8 mana to tutor up 3 cards using Increasing Ambition all the time.
I think it's so cool. You should be able to just tutor 3 cards in most any deck and find yourself in a winning position in most cases, I suppose.
Which I think will segue us nicely into our main topic. So, astute listeners will listen to this conversation. Rose, me and Robin have similar opinions about how magic should work. And we are both major players for House Dimir.
Mm-hmm. Best combination there is, right?
For those not in the know, what are you doing here? No, I'm joking. House Dimir is what we refer to as the blue-black allied coloured pairing. I've run a multitude of Dimir Commander decks, and I've played against one very, very good Dimir-coloured deck that Robin does. We'll come on to them in a second. Mm-hmm. First of all, we're just going to talk about the colour pairing, how they work in Commander, what its strengths and weaknesses are. So when you think Dimir in Commander, Robin, what automatically comes to mind?
Basically, anything sneaky feels Dimir, sitting back, not really doing much to threaten the table, and then just winning out of nowhere is very Dimir to me. And I love that. I love the tension it creates when you look like you're losing the game, basically, and you're the last person on the table, and then you just win out of nowhere. That's a good game for me. And that's the typical, the diplomatic way of winning, I think.
Yeah, I would really agree with that. And I find with my two main Dimir commanders that I run are Lazav, Dimir Mastermind, and I'm
tried it a few times. I've actually only just started to get it working, but Veil of the Nightclad.
Oh, that's a cool card.
Yeah, she's very interesting. But both of them have a feeling of sort of ticking over. The spells in the deck are legitimately powerful on their own, but not going to win you a game. There's nothing of like a tooth and nail type power level. You know, I'm just going to go get two cards out of my deck and Kiki Jiki Zealous Conscripts everyone off the table.
Yeah.
But then there's things where you sit there and go, right, you never quite feel when you're using a Dimir deck that's built reasonably that you're out of the game fully. There's always a chance that you're going to be able to pull something out of the bag and just swing back. And I think one of the defining aspects of the Dimir colors is using your opponent's cards against them.
Yeah, that's also a very good feeling. And a very bad feeling when it happens to you. So you can really relate to that that sensation.
Well, there's a wonderful moment where your opponent's complaining. Going, oh, your deck's really broken and busted and overpowered. You know, the usual janky whinge. And they can't really do it. Because all of your cards that you've played against them have been cards you've either stolen, cloned, or cast from their deck, hand, or graveyard.
Which is a good thing to do. Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I also think if you look at it purely from an analytical standpoint, if you listen to, for example, Josh and Jimmy's podcast, The Command Zone. Yeah, they will tell you that the two most important things for an ADH deck is to have card draw and ramp. And blue and black both have card draw and ramp in them. So blue, not very rampy. Black is very rampy, especially if it's by itself or with just one other color. And blue is really the king of card draw and card selection. So it's got all the tools it needs to do most anything, I think. And also there's this good range of commanders promoting very very different strategies, which I think is nice too.
Yeah, so I think it's important to note as well. So you got blue is the card draw king, but I actually think black is very much second in best color for card draw in Magic.
Oh yeah, I agree with that. And it's also got all the tutors, so which is so good in the singleton style of the format. So
yeah, and a lot of people frown on tutors, don't they?
Yeah, I can see that. But if you play like a deck full of not that powerful cards, if you're just tutoring for answers to other people's things, I don't think it's too bad, actually.
Yeah, see, I always defend tutors, because I play black in almost every deck, with the exception of the Maelstrom Wanderer, and I've got an Artaka deck, which I bring out when I want to be super derpy, play my Timmy style. But black is in everything else I play. And if you remove tutor from black, you're really strongly pulling one of its major strengths out. No other color tutors like black. Would it be fair to say to the green player, and I mean, I do this on the show jokingly to Phil, but would it be fair to say to the green player, well, I don't think you should be allowed to play ramp spells in your deck because it's unfair because the other colors can't ramp anywhere near as well as you.
And obviously they would just say bollocks to that and play all the ramp they want anyway, so... Well, most ramps are actually tutoring lands for you as well. So it's kind of like a tutor, just a very good tutor. So
yeah, I think if you're going to tutor, listeners, my advice to you would be the thing that really annoys people about tutors is twofold. One, if your meta has a lot of sort of two-card infinite loop, I wins. So, especially if one of those two cards is the commander of the deck, so you've already got it. But the classic example in black is Sanguine Bond, Exquisite Blood.
Yeah.
And you're just going, right, I'm just going to tutor to get half of the combo and then tutor to get the other half. I win, guys. I mean, there's no skill in that at all.
Yeah, true.
So that is going to start annoying people. The other thing, and I think this is even more, and I know speaking to Sheldon Menery of the Rules Committee fame, when people tutor for the sake of it and don't know what card they're going to go and get.
Oh,
and maybe it's the beginning of their main phase and they've still got all their mana untapped. So it's one thing to say, I'm just going to tutor at the end of my turn. You take your turn while I go look for what card I get, which has its own downfalls as well, but that's a different thing. But you sit there and essentially you've got 3, 4, 5 other people just watching you look at a deck of cards going,
I might want this thing, I might want this thing. Let's see. I'm going to flip this to the front so just so you all see how many good cards I have in my deck, and I'm going to shuffle extra long after I've been looking through. Yeah, I get that. I mean, that's really a guy in my playgroup. He just played. He just built Xur the Enchanter, it's called, right? The guy who tutors up enchantments every turn. And it gets really annoying because you know you're going to lose once you find Necropotence and you're just going to lose outright. But it takes like 4 or 5 or 6 turns, and every turn he's looking through his deck and finding something new. And I really hate when it does that. And also, you know, the guy who's taking like a 10-minute turn and he tutors 2 or 3 times during the turn and then he doesn't win. That's like the worst thing ever. Because then you have to go another lap around the table, and usually he has all the powerful stuff he needs to just miss a cup of mana or something. So he wins anyway, but you need to wait for just a bit longer to lose the game. I really hate that too.
Yeah, it's the same in Mass Land Destruction, without segueing too far. But if you blow up all the lands and don't win that turn, that's why people don't like Mass Land Destruction.
Yeah, exactly.
If every time you resolve an Armageddon, you win that turn, no one cares. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, yeah, true.
Or you win maybe next turn, but, you know, no one cares at all. But
I think these 2 or 3 card combos that kill the table, I mean, they might be really annoying in some cases, and it might be frustrating to lose out of nowhere. To some guy who just happened to draw his Micaeus and his Triskelion 2 turns in a row. But when that happens, at least you can just shuffle up and play another game. So I think it's fine that games end, but I don't like it when they end through combos. And I especially don't like it when they end through the same combo tutored up in all the games you play that night. That's really boring Magic to me. So I think the bottom line is, if you're going to use tutors, use them responsibly. It's like drinking. And also know your deck list if you're going to use your tutors, and use the other player's turns to think about what you're going to get with your demonic tutor or your vampiric tutor or something.
So I guess to apply that to Dimir, because you've got a lot of card draw going on in the deck anyway, from both black and blue, you've got black's own special way of ramping. Perhaps you can cut back on tutors a bit, but I think some people don't like Dimir, and by proxy, Esper, for the same reason, because that's black, blue, white, mm-hmm. and Sultai, because that's black, blue, green, mm-hmm. because it has this really annoying and powerful trigger in it. I would say constantly tutoring is probably up there with Mass Land Destruction for things that people don't like, other than maybe taking multiple turns over and over again.
People hate losing that way too.
But you can do that in Dimir as well. Yeah. So just
quite easily.
Yeah, build Dimir decks responsibly. So what's the Dimir color combination? So it's good at sort of card draw, ramp, tutoring, and sort of playing sneaky stuff and using your opponent's spells against them. What's it poor at, Robin?
I think dealing with enchantments is tough, and dealing with artifacts is tough. You can always use counter magic for everything, but people tend to do that. And also, There are these games where it could, because the ramp isn't that good, black has its own special version of ramping, but if you're relying on mana rocks or anything, and people just sometimes they just go land, Sol Ring, Signet, next turn cultivate, next turn play my commander and kill you, so it can be hard to keep up with some of the other color combinations if they get really good starts. You might not even have enough mana to use your counter magic when they play their important stuff if you tapped out to try and get a signet or something in play.
Yeah, I would agree. So you have to start loading up your deck with some of the colorless permanent removals. Mm-hmm. So Scour from Existence is a very good one, and Unstable Obelisk as well. So Scour from Existence is an instant exile target permanent. Unstable Obelisk is a mana rock for 3 mana that produces 1 colorless, and you can pay 7 and tap it to destroy target permanent.
Tap it and sacrifice it, important, because you can't do that.
If you can do it over and over again. God, that would be a phenomenal card.
Yeah, that'd be really good.
But ultimately, at that point, if you need to get rid of a powerful, or like someone drops a Doubling Season against you and mm-hmm. they're using any kind of Super Friends deck or token deck that's going to abuse that Doubling Season, you have to kind of rely on the charity of others to deal with that, unless you're pulling up that scour or that unstable obelisk. There's a couple of other examples of things that'll do it, but it's really, really tricky.
Yeah, again, it also puts an emphasis on the diplomatic play, because you, as you said, you might need to use the other players at the table to deal with those case impermanence. Or otherwise, my backup is always just going hard into the stall the game and go for a Cyclonic Rift plan, but that's also quite boring. I hate winning that way too, just bounce everything and then play your stuff and people are really behind. But that might be the only out to some border states with lots of enchantments on it.
Yeah, Cyclonic Grift will do that good.
I was thinking about Phil's Karametra and Enchantress deck, for example, which tends to get on my nerves with all this stuff he puts out.
Oh, and it keeps coming back.
Yeah.
Oh. So I think what we're going to do now, listeners, is we're going to discuss, each of us going to discuss our top five Dimir coloured cards. And this isn't a blue card that works well with Dimir or a black card that works well with Dimir. This is going to be one that's specifically blue and black in its CMC or activation. And then we'll each talk about our favourite Dimir commander after we've done our individual cards.
Mm-hmm.
So Robin, take us away. What is your number five pick?
My number five pick is going to be Far Away. That's a split card. Half of it is called Far and half of it's called Away. And the far side, that's a blue side, it's one generic and one blue, an instant, return target creature to its owner's hand. And the away side is two generic and a black, instant, target player sacrifices a creature. And then the spell also has Fuse, this is from Dragon's Mace. So you can play both sides at the same time if you want to. So individually, these cards, these sides of the same card, they're both worse than, say, Unsummon or Diabolic Edict, but together, I mean, the fact that you can bounce their second best guy, have them sacrifice the best guy for one card is really, really good. It's like huge tempo play in Dimir. And it really, I think, underlines what Dimir is all about, the cards like this. It's flexibility, and it's quite subtle if you play it carefully. And it's also really powerful if you play it correctly.
I think anything where you get modal and then if you have the spare mana can cast both is a strong thing. So yeah, if that, it's, you know, the 2-for-1 on the card is really, really good. I actually only discovered Far and Away recently, Robin, when you were sharing your fairy deck with me, which we'll talk about in a bit. Yeah, so I thank you for that one. It was late to my knowledge of the Dimir.
Yeah, it's a really good card. Use it in all my blue and black decks, actually. Can't think not playing it.
That's a super cheap card. So we do everything on using TCG Player Mid. That is currently, if you're looking at the dollar pounds price, 24 cents. So one gumball, listeners, one gumball.
And you even get a penny back on your gumball price. So there you go.
Okay, so my number five pick is also an instant. It is Spinal Embrace. Now, we've spoken about this on the show before. This card is 3, 2 blue and a black for an instant. So a 6-mana instant, it better be good. You can only cast Spinal Embrace during combat steps. Untap target creature you don't control and gain control of it. It gains haste until the end of turn, and at the end of the turn, sacrifice it. If you do, you gain life equal to its toughness.
Oh my god.
So yeah, someone's got that annoying Avacyn out. Anyway, you can take it, attack someone with it, sacrifice it, and gain 8 life.
Or like the worst part, because I've never played this card actually, I've only played against it. And what will usually happen is you attack with two creatures and your opponent steals one guy, kills your other guy, and then just sacrifices the one he stole at the end of the turn. Really hate that. Such a cool 2-for-1, and he also gains some life on top of it. So.
Yeah, the little life gain's just a nice thing. It's normally a very red effect.
Yeah. The threatened part is really red, usually.
Yeah, it's just so good. I mean, it's a little expensive to cast, but I think the ability, if you had a card that says essentially destroy or force a player to sacrifice a creature and gain life equal to that creature's toughness, you'd pay 6 for that, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you could. I think It's really cool if you use it responsibly as well. And if you maybe you might not use it if you're blue black and you're reactive control style playing, and there's two more guys ahead of you, and before you get to untap, then maybe six is a bit pricey for that effect. But if it's the last guy and you get to untap immediately after, and I don't think you shouldn't not play it. But basically, you should play it all the time. I must get a couple of these. How much are they for the TCG? A
whopping TCG player mid. This is 35 cents. Yeah. 35 cents, Robin.
There you go.
So just over a gumball.
Yeah, I'll get 10 or something.
Yeah, it's grand. It's a great, great card. But Robin, that brings on, what's your number four pick?
My number four pick is a really long card. It's Limdor's Vault. It's a blue and a black, and it's also an instant. And it says, look at the top five cards of your library. As many times as you choose, you may pay one life. Put those cards on the bottom of your library in any order. Then look at the top five cards of your library. Then shuffle your library and put the last cards you looked at this way on top of it in any order. So you basically get to just look through as many parts of your deck as you want to in chunks of five cards at a time for the price of one life at a time. And it's actually card disadvantage, but because it doesn't draw you anything, but you get to set up your next couple of turns in a way that's really, really good. So you can tutor for the best card in your deck and then find the second best and the third best out of those four cards that you don't tutor for, and just set it all up. And blue black are the colors to actually regain that card disadvantage, so it's usually fine. And it's also instant speed, so it's really good for that use, I think.
It's a great card. The original art's a bit poor. This is a card from Alliances, unbelievably.
Yeah, it looks really brown. The original art's quite ugly, actually.
It got a nice reprint not so long ago in one of the Commander products in the Aloro Age of Synthetic deck.
Mm-hmm.
A warning on this one, though, Robin. I've killed someone with this. I've killed someone with a Limdol's Vault. That's right.
Mindslaver?
How did you do that? It was, I mindslavered them, which meant I controlled their turn, and they didn't, in response, cast their Limdol's Vault. So I just cast the Limdol's Vault and activated it 40 times.
I never let people mindslaver me, so it's fine. I think I'm fine.
I was using a big Centriplets Esper artifact deck, so I think it's fine there.
Oh. But,
I didn't feel too bad. I mean, I had as much consciousness about it as what an English person can have.
Yeah, I see. You are really the most evil people in the world, right?
Well, yes, but we do it with such politeness that no one really minds.
Yeah. More evil than the German, more polite than the Canadian.
That's weird. That's the House of Windsor's motto. Very strange. How did you know? Okay.
Yeah, that's great. What's your number four, Sean?
My number four is one of the best clones in the entire game, Evil Twin.
Oh, yeah.
Two mana and a blue and a black for a creature shapeshifter. It's a 0/0. You may have Evil Twin enter the battlefield as a copy of any creature on the battlefield, except it gains, pay a blue and a black and tap it, destroy target creature with the same name as this creature. So, there's a pesky commander that keeps coming out. Evil Twin him, and keep killing him over and over again when your opponent can. And if it's a really, 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 I mean, other than sort of indestructible things, if it's a really annoying commander, like let's pick one, Prosh. Yeah,
it's really annoying.
Narset, if you've got an Arcane Lighthouse floating around.
Yeah. Meren,
yeah. Rafika the Many.
Mm-hmm.
Mizzix, if you get this latched onto a Mizzix, it's very powerful. And Zer. The rest. Oh, we could keep going and keep going, couldn't we? But get this latched onto an awkward commander and just say to the rest of the table, I'm not going to attack with it. I'm not going to do anything with it. I'm just going to keep that commander there, not playing in this game.
That's so evil. And it's so demure at the same time.
Yeah. It's got a great bit of flavor text. You can always tell the evil one by the dagger he's sticking in you.
It's from original Innistrad, right, the card?
It is original Innistrad. Yeah. Really cool thematic card as well. Great artwork. The only thing it's missing is the clearly evil one, and the artwork doesn't have a big moustache.
Top hat and a monocle.
A goatee beard. And Evil Twin will set you back 2 gumballs, 50 cents.
Yeah, easily worth it. Play it in all the decks.
Yeah, I picked up a few foils of this recently, actually, because I run it in like 4 decks. So, Ooh. Yeah, it was nice just to have in foil. What's your number 3, Mr. Cass?
My number 3 is actually also an instant. It's Silumgar's Command. Silumgar's Command, however you want to pronounce it. And it's 3 and a blue and a black. And as I said, it's an instant. And it's a command, so it's a modal card. You get to choose 2 between either counter target non-creature spell, return target permanent to its owner's hand, target creature gets -3/-3 until end of turn, and destroy target planeswalker. So I don't think that there is a way to play this without actually generating card advantage, because I don't think you can do that in Magic. It's such a good card, so flexible. It's a bit pricey. 5 mana is a bit pricey for counter in Magic, but I play it mostly as a counter spell that also happens to like kill a utility creature, bounce an annoying enchantment or something, and do stuff like that. It's really, really good.
Yeah, it's. I really like the fact that you can return target permanent to its owner's hand. That will get rid of a coat of arms that's just been dropped before you die, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I've used this before to counter an opponent's non-creature spell and return a Runescar Demon or a Sadisi back to your hand.
Yeah, it's also good tech.
So yeah, resets a tutor for your deck and you can go get something to, I don't know, possibly get Silumgar's Command back into your hand.
Well, it basically resets anything that has a good dent to the battlefield effect, right? Does that have to be tutoring specifically, but anything that's like a Grave Titan or something along those lines is also pretty good to bounce. And you can use it to save creatures in combat and kill something else and do various tricky things. And like the modal thing and doing the tricky thing, both very demure, both very, very blue-black in my book.
I used it to kill a Meron the other day. Somebody used their Meron trigger to put a Merciless Executioner, and Meron was the only other creature they had, back onto the table. So they put the Merciless Executioner trigger on the stack, you bounce the Executioner back to their hand, and then Meron has to sacrifice.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Or you can -3/-3 the Executioner and bounce something else and then have to sacrifice Meron.
I don't need to explain to you how good Destroy Target Planeswalker can be.
Yeah, obviously. Like one turn before Narset, it's ultimate, you probably she needs to die.
Hey, Narset doesn't go ultimate unless you're playing against Nick Jaragoski, then she always goes ultimate. Sorry, friend of the show, Nick Jaragoski.
Oh, I hate that ultimate. It's really annoying, actually.
Pulled it off so many times. More than any Planeswalker I've got that ultimate off. Maybe only seconded by Liliana of the Dark Realms.
Is that the one that makes everybody Lake of the Dead swamps like tap for 4?
Yeah, it makes all your swamps tap for 4 black.
Jesus.
And people just go, it's not that bad. Oh, it is.
Hey, exsanguinate all of you.
Yeah, exsanguinate Death to the Deathless. All of you are dead. Right. Yeah. Good night. But anyway, she's for a different conversation.
Games have to end. It's true.
Do have to end. Silumgar's Command is an excellent pick, and nice that it's recently, you know, it's from Dragons and 56 cents.
Yeah.
56 whole cents. Now, I've gone with a slight theme with my number 3 pick, a bit of a classic, Dimir Doppelganger.
Oh, that's also a really good clone, actually.
Yeah, so some of the really powerful things in Commander are things like Rest in Peace, Relic of Progenitus, Bajuka Bog, things that exile stuff out of your opponent's graveyard. So what Dimir Doppelganger does is it feeds into that and gives you clone effects at the same time. So she is 1, a blue and a black for a creature shapeshifter. She comes in as a 0/2, And for one, a blue and a black, exile target creature card in a graveyard from the game. Dimir Doppelganger becomes a copy of that card and gains this ability.
Mm-hmm.
So Dimir is also very good at milling decks. There's a lot of mill cards in Dimir. So someone mills out their Avacyn or something really big. You sit this, you go three mana, I've got my own copy. And I've exiled theirs at the same time. It's just pure value town the whole way. Someone's playing with Merrin and they keep sticking that Spore Frog into their graveyard. Exile it.
Spore Frog's my favorite card in Merrin, actually. It's so good.
He just wants to be loved.
Yeah, but it's so true. And I mean, abusing the graveyard is such a common strategy in EDH. There's so many commanders who can do crazy reanimation things very early in the game. So having this, you just dropped on turn three, nobody cares about it, and then when it starts going, unless it dies to a random sweeper, it will probably get you something really good. And you're actually hating on people's graveyards as well at the same time, which is really nice.
Yeah, so it's quality. And now this has actually gone up in price a little lately, despite it being reprinted in
Conspiracy.
Right?
Yeah.
It's crept back up to $1.25.
Wow.
And it was down at like 50 cents. So something's using it for something. That's quite a big price increase. But it's a high quality card. And I would recommend it for any deck that runs blue and black and something else. I would just drop it in. And it's also got cool flavor text. Fear not, your life will not go unlived.
And a really creepy artwork as well.
Oh, I've got a foil of this. All that barbed wire stuff she's got wrapped around her, that's the only bit on the card that's foiled.
It sounds really cool.
Yeah, it is very cool. So, yeah, very cool. Robin!
Yes.
Getting into the high bits now. What is your number two?
My number two is actually a creature.
What?
And it's actually not blue and black. It's actually colorless, if you can take a guess, dear listeners. It's called Sire of Stagnation, and it's four generic, a blue and a black, and it's got Devoid, so it's colorless. And it says, whenever a land enters the battlefield under an opponent's control, that player exiles the top two cards of his or her library, and you draw two cards, and it's a 5/7.
Well, so I've heard some backlash against this card, saying it's not very good.
Oh.
So that's come from people, the general opinion bit. It's been from a few sources. Some of them I even respect. have fun if you think it's you, listeners. I'm joking. They say that all it does is stop people playing land.
Yeah.
But all it's done then is stop your opponents playing land.
Yeah, like, I think that's pretty good. For and it's a 5/7 for 6, so it's quite big. It's hard to deal with without creatures. And if people aren't playing lands and you are playing lands, then you will get ahead eventually.
And all I can say is that, I mean, it's almost like it stagnates the board.
Yeah, exactly.
And you see the players that want to sit there and I've actually flashed one of these in as someone cast Boundless Realms before.
Oh, wow.
Flashed it in using Vedalken Orrery.
Oh, God. Say,
adios. Cheers for that. Boundless Realms lets you, for each land you have in play, go get a basic land and put it into play tapped.
I was just thinking, in response to anything like a Sky Shroud Claim, getting two lands into player, Explosive Vegetation, any of these double land ramp spells, it's really good in response to that. But I guess Boundless Realms get everything really crazy with Sire of Stagnation.
Yeah, I mean, and there will normally be a player at the table that says, oh, sod it, I really need to have an extra land this turn, or a land this turn, should I say, and drops it and lets you take the cards.
Yeah, and I mean, the strange thing is, in my opinion, well, in my experience, rather, usually people are more upset with that player than with you, who cast the Sire of Stagnation. So.
Yeah, because they're giving you the cards. Yeah. Like, oh, don't give him cards, exactly. For God's sake. Now, this guy is cheap for a mythic. He is only $1.41.
There you go. Might as well try it then.
When he first came out, he was like a $10 card.
Yeah, I think it was a bit hyped. I think he didn't quite live up to the hype, but I think he's a really good creature. He doesn't go into all the decks. I think 6 mana is really expensive, but for the 6 mana, you do really get your mana's worth, I think. He's not consecrated things, but it doesn't really draw the same amount of hate as a Sphinx as well. So.
Yeah, I think if you're building, tipping my hat again to the Commander's Brew, if you're building budget and you want a Consphinx type effect, Cyrus Stagnation is he is to Consecrate Sphinx what Seedborn Muse is to Prophet Crucifix.
Yeah, and although both are still legal in the format.
That's true. And Seedborn Muse is considerably more expensive than but I meant in effect rather than price and legality. Yeah. But yeah. Yeah, anything else to say on the Sire?
I don't think so. What's your number 2?
My number 2 is a bit of an overlooked gem in this colour pairing. Haven Ghoul Lich. So, Haven Ghoul Lich is 3, a blue and a black for a creature zombie wizard, and it's 4/4, so you know it better be good if it's a 4/4 zombie wizard. You can pay 1 colorless. You may cast target creature card from any graveyard this turn. When you cast the card that turn, Haven Ghoul Lich gains all activated abilities of that card until the end of turn. So the second bit's okay. Like, if you've got a nice tap ability on a creature you want to animate, sure, go for it. But the ability to cast any creature card out of an opponent's graveyard, and it doesn't go away at the end of turn. It's not until the end of turn. You just cast it. It's yours.
That's so crazy. But nobody else is playing blue or black in EDH ranks.
No one plays blue or black. And I mean, now rule 4's gone, you definitely can't have a couple of like... Oh, what? You only realistically need Commander Sphere and one other land. Rupture Spire, City of Brass, mm-hmm. Mana Confluence, something. To really be able to cast anything.
Yeah. Sounds pretty good, actually.
Yeah, so 5 mana's alright. It's a bit expensive, but it's a 4/4.
Yeah.
Goes into Zombie Tribal, so you'll see this card go into Grimgrin decks.
If you get to untap with that thing, I think you're going to generate lots of value for yourself.
Yeah, it's grand. I mean, if people are playing little cheap utility creatures that are in blue or black, you know, or if you're playing, I mean, if you're playing outside of Dimir and are playing in Esper or Sultai,
mm-hmm.
you've got access to white or green mana as well.
Yeah.
Which suddenly makes it really good.
Yeah. How much is it? It should be expensive.
He's actually not the cheapest of what everything we've been saying. He is $4.05. So he's by far the most expensive card we've mentioned so far. He was only ever been printed in Dark Ascension, I believe. Yeah, he's only ever had one printing, which I guess is why he's...
And it's a mythic, right? So.
And he is a mythic from not a massively... Well, I suppose Dark Ascension was popular because all of Innistrad Block was popular, but wasn't opened as anywhere near as much as the other two in that set, I don't think.
Yeah, because the draft format changed, so you drafted Avacyn Restored alone. So yes. You only really drafted Dark Ascension for half as long as either of the other two sets. So,
but I would definitely pick up a Haven Ghoul Lich or two if you are into these colours.
Yeah, I agree. I'm going to get one right after we finish this thing.
Add him to the basket. Take a drink, listener. Oh, and I've already mentioned doubling season this episode, so take a drink, listener.
Cyclonic Rift is on the list too, right?
It should be. Cyclonic Rift. Go for it. Robin, what is your number one best of the best, tip of the top? Shh, don't tell anyone because we're a secretive guild, Dimir card.
Yeah, speaking of small utility creatures, my favorite Dimir card of all time is also a creature, but it's an artifact creature, and it's called Baleful Strix. It's only a single blue and a single black, so 2 mana for a flying Death Touch, and when it enters the battlefield, you draw a card. It's a 1/1, and this is the best type of. I wrote quite a long post on my blog a couple of weeks ago, about rattlesnakes, cards that tend to scare people away. And this card is one of the best rattlesnakes in the entire game because it gets to block like everything. You get your card back instantly, so you're not really down a card, even if you block just anything with it. And, I mean, if you recur it, you get insane amounts of value. Basically, this card is so good.
I mean, if you had a Haven Ghoul Lich out.
Yeah, exactly. And a sack outlet, you just draw a bunch of cards every turn.
Yeah, it's truly great. And if you draw it late game, it doesn't matter because essentially you're paying 2 mana to replace it in your hand and still have a 1/1 flying Death Touch. It's going to sit there and put someone off throwing that giant creature at you.
Yeah. So, and yeah, you don't really need to even play with any cards that can recur it or work specifically with it because it's so good on its own. It's like it's the best 2-mana creature card that I know of that I play with in Dimir. It's better than Bob, it's better than Snapcaster Mage, it's better than anything, in my opinion, because it does so much for your board position that Snapcaster Mage, for example, doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, they printed a card similar to it recently, Fathom Feeder, which is a blue and a black for a 1/1 with Death Touch and Ingest and is devoid. And you could pay 5 mana to exile the top card off everyone else's library and draw a card. But it's a solid card. I mean, 2 mana for a 1/1 Death Touch puts people off attacking you.
Yeah, but it's not flying and you need to invest a bunch of mana to draw cards.
Fly, yeah.
I mean, I play both, so I play Fathom Feeder as well. I think it's pretty good, and you ruin all the vampiric tutors and musical tutors and those kinds of tutors as well when it's on the board.
Yeah, Ingest is when it deals combat damage to a player, they exile the top card of their library.
Yeah, and it's also exiling when you draw the card, so you can activate it in the insta speed if people don't watch out. You can just get it away.
But the Baleful Strix, to give you an idea, this has been reprinted only in its original set, which was Shards of Alara, I believe.
No, Plane Chase, I think.
Was Plane Chase the original? It's been done twice. So. Well, I was going to say, and Plane Chase. So this is a $5 uncommon. It was Plane Chase and
Commander.
And Commander, it was in the Chelava. Yeah. How are we pronouncing that now, deck?
Same box as True Name Nemesis, because they wanted one of the decks to sell really, really well.
Did I tell you how I got a cheap one of those decks?
No.
Oh, they were selling True Name Nemesis for about £15, which is $20-ish dollars, American listeners. So I found I didn't really care about that card, so I found a vintage player that just gave me £10 for the True Name Nemesis, and I kept the rest of the deck. There you go. I get all these other great cards.
Yeah, including a Baleful Strix. So.
Including a Baleful Strix for 20 quid.
Yeah, that's really good.
And I ended up picking up a True Name Nemesis later on anyway for pennies. From also good didn't know card what they had.
I mean, I got 3 just because I used to play Legacy. So it's a really
good True Name Nemesis is a 3/1 merfolk that when it enters the battlefield, you select target player. And True Name Nemesis has protection from that player.
Yeah, so it's basically a Progenitus for 3 mana that can carry equipment and do other crazy things in Legacy.
Yeah.
But it's not that good in multiplayer because anybody else is just going to kill it.
But yeah, the Strix is uncommon and is $5.
Yeah. It used to be even more expensive before it was reprinted in Commander 2013. So.
And it desperately needs a foil printing. Like, people like me that like to trick out their passion decks, and Lazav is my passion deck. You can't get a foil one. It's never been made.
Yeah, you could get a 4-in-1, though. You can get, like, a...
Yeah, Japanese one always looks nice. Korean, I always think looks nice. Looks nice written on a card.
Yeah, or you just get, like, an altar or something. Also pretty pimp.
Yeah. So anything else to say about the Strix?
No, I don't. Use it, love it, play it in all the decks ever.
Okay, so I'll move on to my... pick. Now, this is my favorite Dimir card, and it might be in my top 3 favorite cards of all time. I've spoken about it before on the show, but I'm going to speak about it gushingly again now. It's an instant. It's Memory Plunder. Now, it's 4 hybrid blue-black mana. Now, you think that's hard to cast. Because it's hybrid mana, it's not as hard as you think. For an instant, you may play target instant or sorcery card in your opponent's graveyard
without paying its mana cost.
Oh, that's so good.
So you might think, well, you know, other things do that effect. Now, most other things that do that effect are sorcery speed.
Yeah.
Which means this card breaks the timing on cards. So, for example, the last game of Magic I played, my opponent had cast Rise of the Dark Realms, and then another opponent the turn after had cast a Ingaruk's Wake to clear the table. And it was a Meren deck and a Horde of Notions deck, I believe. And well, that allowed me to do, and the opponent before me's end step, I cast Rise of the Dark Realms. Excellent. Which brought back an Eternal Witness that returned my memory plunder to my hand. I get swingy, someone kills all my stuff, I can cast Rise of the Dark Realms. Because a lot of the other effects as well, like Spelltwine, etc., that do this recursion of instant or sorcery, exile the spell that it's hitting.
Yeah, but this does it, right?
Memory Plunder does not.
Yeah.
You just cast it again.
That's so cool. It's such a sweet card.
And it breaks, because it breaks the timing, it kind of takes up a spot in your deck of a board wipe, because someone will board wipe at some point. And then you've got instant speed board wipe in your hand.
Yeah.
Instant all the speed, time.
Breath of God or Life's Finale or something really good like that.
Yeah, or Ingaruk's Wake.
Yeah, exactly.
Decree of Pain. Which board wipes and then gets you a ton of stuff.
My favorite memory of this card, by the way, can I tell the story?
Yeah, of course you can.
Maybe Phil will feel bad, but we'll see.
No. Take it away, Robin. Make Phil feel awful.
We were
awful.
Playing in the playtest group. I think it was a 4-player game. And in the game was me and Phil and Urs, I know, the Swiss guy who just joined. Urs and I, we can't really get along at the table for some reason. He keeps pinging me with his Obsidet triggers. He keeps attacking me first, even though I'm not really doing anything.
And maybe he smells power. He smells power.
Yeah, exactly. And he cast Identity Crisis targeting me. And that's a sorcery from A Lot of Reborn. And it says 2 generic, 2 white and 2 black for remove all cards in target player's hand and graveyard from the game. So you exile everything, really, that the player is holding or has ever played. And he does it to my Demir deck, and I'm like, I'm going to do this.
Right.
Yeah, but I was eventually able to get back into the game through Rhystic Study, because I was drawing a bunch of cards, people were playing spells, and eventually I drew my Memory Plunder, and I played the same Identity Crisis on Phil, who was playing Gitrog Monster and had like 40 of cards, 20 cards in his graveyard, all the cycling lands, the Life from the Loam, all the shenanigans. Everything just went away. He's like, oh, Robin, why would you do that? I'm like, sorry, really big fan of your show.
Oh, God.
And it was Ur's card that I cast on him, so it's really his fault.
It's Ur's fault, yeah. Like, absolutely, yeah, 100% agree. For retro lols, I memory plundered someone's red elemental blast to kill Mizzix of the Ismagus the other day. Memory plundering to kill someone else's creature isn't that exciting. Memory plundering to cast red elemental blast. Now, bravo. Bravo to anyone that puts that in their deck.
Yeah, and I mean, the power level of this card, I think, is really inconsistent because it depends on what the other guys are having in their decks or already played or what you've been able to mill during the game. But in those cases when it's like really, really powerful, as in my story, or just being an instant speed for a mana board wipe, it's both really good instances. So I think it's really definitely worth playing in any Demir deck.
Yeah. And it couples up with the mill strategy that Demir does very well as well. So you're churning, you know,
yeah,
loads of stuff into people's graveyards, then
hitting some recursion spell. Rise of the Dark Realms, Living Death, they're good examples.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, actually, you wouldn't want a Living Death because it'll put all the stuff you just milled back into your opponent's control. But
it might be fun, though. Fun way to end the game.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah. And Robin, you've got a Memory Plunder. What lovely person sent you that?
I was just getting to that. It was actually you.
Apparently, this card is rare and hard to find in Sweden.
Yeah. Along with another card that we might discuss a bit later, I think.
So, Memory Plunder will cost you roughly $4.
It's pretty expensive, but it's only been printed in Shadowmoor, right?
Yeah, just the ones in Shadowmoor, and never again. I don't know if we'll ever see it's like again, or if you saw a card like it again, I'm pretty sure it would say exile the spell that you've hit.
So pick it up now, folks. Well, it's still only $4 because it will just keep climbing from here.
Yeah, it's steadily gone up. I think I got my first one, it was about $1.50, maybe $2. So that was a few years ago now, but it has been going.
Yeah, well, mine was free, so...
So Robin, do you want to just mention a couple of quick honourable mentions? We won't go into these too deep, and then we'll talk about our favourite commanders in these colours.
Yes, I have two honourable mentions that I want to mention. The first one is called Baron Spite. Do you know it?
I don't know this card. Yeah. I haven't even looked it up because I was waiting for you to excite me.
Yeah, it's a sorcery. It's two generic, blue and a black. It's from Invasion. It's a rare, really old card. And it says, choose two target creatures controlled by one player. That player chooses and sacrifices one of them, return the other to its owner's hand. I mean, so it's basically a one mana cheaper, but a worse far away because the opponent has the choice. But it's like Sophie's Choice, right? You get to pick the favorite creature out of the two. So I think it's really cool. It's one of those cards that tends to be like just on the cutting edge of my deck. So I tend to have it in all the drafts, and then I play it way too rarely. But it's a really fun card when you get to cast it.
I like it.
Yeah, and the artwork is like Baron splitting two Phyrexians in half, so it's really cool. You should check it out.
I will. I hope he's splitting those Phyrexians in half so they can go and make new, smaller Phyrexians, because we don't like Phyrexians dying.
Right. That's Phil, right?
Phil wants them dead, yeah. Curse him. You wait till... If Phil was a guest on the Commander's Brew recently... And he made some strong opinions about Phyrexia and Phyrexian glory and perfection.
Yeah, I heard.
And I will be rebuking and rebutting those comments when I get on that show.
I'm looking forward to it.
What's your second honorable mention?
Yeah, my second is a really innocent little instant. It's called the Mirror Charm. And it's a charm, so it's pick one out of three, and the three are a counter target sorcery spell, or destroy target creature with power two or less, or look at the top three cards of target player's library, then put one back and the rest into that player's graveyard. And either of these effects, it costs one blue and one black, and either of these are, I think, are too bad to pay two mana, especially to mana have different colors for, but all together when you get to pick, I think it's pretty good actually. You get to kill like some sort of utility creature, or you get to counter in Garuk's Wake or something, or you get to for example, like imagine I used to do this all the time in Legacy, by the way, because I used to play it in Legacy. Like imagine it's like the last turn of the game, you got lethal on board. And you only have one opponent left, and you cast this, here, have a land on top of your library, sir. Good luck finding it out to my board state. And then you just kill him from there.
Yeah,
I think it's really fun. And the artwork is also really cool, because it's like this the mirror symbol in the sky that's made up of different buildings and shadows and light and stuff. So check it out.
It's my banner on Twitter.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah, if you look on my Twitter pages, my banner is the artwork to that card, because it's pretty. See, you don't see the Dimir signet until it's too late.
Yeah, as the flavor says, it's from Lasav. He says, dangerous to recognize, deadly not to. Really Dimir in my book, too.
I'm actually going to pick an honourable mention that was on, because we just sort of pooled ours, but Robin had it on his, but I'm going to steal it as one of my own, which is Una,
Queen of the Fae.
Mm-hmm.
Una, Queen of the Fae. She is a legendary creature fairy wizard. She is 3/3 hybrid blue-black for a 5/5 flying fairy wizard. You can pay X and 1 hybrid blue-black. Choose a colour. Target opponent exiles the top X cards of their library. For each card of the chosen colour exiled this way, put a 1/1 blue-black fairy rogue token creature onto the with flying onto the battlefield. So that's a really solid commander. The reason I don't love it as much as you might think I should is twofold. One, it exiles the cards off your opponent's library,
mm-hmm.
which I think you want to use your opponent's graveyard in these colors.
Yeah, it's the more demure way to actually mill them and then take advantage of whatever you milled from them.
Whereas Una isn't giving that advantage. And two, the really powerful Una decks out there rely on infinite mana loops to say, I've got an infinite mana loop, all of you exile all your libraries.
Yeah. I mean, likely if you flip this over, if you say that you're playing like a casual fairy tribal thing, people are going to kill you first anyway if you show this.
It suffers with trademark Jason Alt, the Rafik problem.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Couldn't you like do an Eldrazi deck with this and use a bunch of processors with the cards you've exiled? Maybe it's too janky, it's too clunky.
I'm not sure there's enough processors to make it work.
Yeah, maybe not.
In those colors.
Maybe not. Just a way of using the exiled cards against the people, I suppose, but maybe I'm looking too deep into that.
Yeah, honestly, Una is in my Lazav deck, for example, just as a way I can. She's big and beefy, yeah. And. You know,
get the last few cards away after you mailed somebody for all but 5 cards or something.
Yeah, I've done that. Though, to be honest, if I ever find something truly better that's a creature, I'll drop her like it's hot. But I do think she's worth noting. But the reason she's not higher on the list of sort of decent Dimir commanders is I just think she plays against her own strategy too much.
Yeah.
Or the guild strategy too much.
And well, if you ask me, she's only the second best fairy blue-black commander available. Yeah.
Well, that brings us nicely along. So to close out our main topic, we're each going to discuss loosely, not go too deep, but loosely our favourite commanders in these colors. So, Robin, would you like to get the ball rolling?
Oh, yeah. My favorite commander in Dimir is called Widwin the Biting Gale.
Let me pause you there. I'm going to give you the response I'm going to guess you get from a lot of people when you put that commander on the table. Oh, she's rubbish.
Yeah, exactly. She looks like nothing. And people are like, why would you ever play with that? And then everybody loses to it. So it's...
In the interest of clarity, I made that same mistake.
Yeah, that's true. I don't think there's anybody who I haven't killed with the deck in the playtest group that I have played against. So, not trying to be overly confident with the card, but really, I honestly think that she's really underrated as a commander, and she doesn't look like much, but she's really, really good.
So what does she do, this terrible card?
Yeah, she's 2 generic, a blue and a black. She's like Una, she's a legendary creature, fairy wizard. And she's a 3/3, like Lazav. So a 3/3 for 4. But she has flash, flying, and for a blue and a black and a life, you can return her from the battlefield to your hand. And that's all. That's everything she does. So what I do with this commander is I play like a blue-black good stuff control game, and where I want to play a slow game, drop a bunch of lands, counter some spells, kill some creatures, and then I want to play a bunch of equipment like sort of Feast and Famine. For example, I like to play Rune Chanter's Pike. Do you know what that card is?
I do, only because of this deck.
Yeah. So for the listeners at home, it's a 2-mana artifact equipment, and it's an equipped creature has first strike and gets +X/+0, where X is the number of instant and sorcery cards in your graveyard, and it equips for 2. And usually it's like a +5 or +6/+0 for Woodwind, because I play a lot of spells in the deck. 35 or something, I believe, to be precise. And I also have the other card that you sent me, the card that I couldn't find in Sweden, which is my favorite equipment in the deck. It's called Grafted War Gear. It's a 3-mana equipment from 5th Dawn, an uncommon, and it says equipped creature gets +3/+2, and whenever Grafted War Gear becomes unattached from a creature, sacrifice that creature, and it equips for 0.
Very nice.
Yeah, it's really nice because usually Woodwind gets unattached by going back to my hand. So when that trigger from the Grafted War Gear resolves, there will be nothing left to sacrifice. So it doesn't actually happen. So just a +3/+2 for 0. So what I want to do is, like, I want to have a bunch of equipment with really cheap or free equip costs to be able to play Woodwind Bouncer if somebody plays a board wipe or a removal spell, block and bounce if somebody tries to kill me with a really big creature, do things like that, really tricky plays. And since she has flash, you can do it several times in the lap of around the table, and you always play her, like, for the ones from the command zone, and then you just bounce her repeatedly, so you never pay the tax for any time for her.
Yeah, so have you contemplated cranial plating in this deck?
I am actually testing it right now, and it's doing really well because I have a bunch of artifacts and artifact lands to be able to both actually power up cranial plating and to do some ramping with Tezzeret the Seeker. So it's doing quite nicely. It's usually +3 or +4/+0 for a single equip cost. And it's also got the nice instant equip cost. For those of you at home, cranial plating is a 2-cost artifact. And it says equipped creature gets +1/+0 for each artifact you control. And for 2 black mana, you can attach it to target creature you control, or you can equip it for 1. So if it's in somebody else's turn, you can just move it around to other creatures if you want to. Or if it's your turn, just pay the 1 single mana for +5/+0, which is pretty good.
I've played against your Woodwind deck many times and played with it. So I was so enamored with it, I built a paper copy of it to just have a fiddle around with. And it actually formed a basis for 2 other decks I play with now, which is my new Valor deck. I stole a lot of ideas from Woodwind to build, and my Centriplets Esper Control deck.
Well, there you go.
I stole a lot of the sort of good ideas for how to use artifacts in those colors from playing with Woodwind. It always felt wrong. It always felt like I was playing with your wife, Robin. When, you know, we'd had a good time, but in my heart, I knew she wasn't mine.
Yeah, it's somewhat become my signature general, actually, when playing online. And I'm playing it in paper, too, more or less the exact copy. Usually, if I play with you guys, I try a couple of cards out that I'm thinking about buying or thinking about getting for the deck. I'm playing it in paper too as my main deck right now. I've got 5 paper ADH decks, but this one is my favorite by quite a margin, actually.
Yeah, and the deck to play against is incredibly frustrating because Robin said, you can bounce her when board wipes go off and stuff. What Robin hasn't said there is those board wipes are often his.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I have 14 creature kill spells. Well, 14 spells that can act as creature kill, at least. So you're not going to get me with creatures, usually. And if you do, not more than once, usually. Not very many creatures in the deck, but it's often fine. If you want to look at the list, it's on my blog. If you go to EDH decks and just click the Woodwind picture, you get to see my list, the latest version. And I'm always tinkering with it, and it's such what I like about decks like this. If you contrast it to, for example, big tribal decks, for example, that have that are quite static, and there are lots of cards that you have to have in the deck. In this case, it's really just a bunch of artifacts and Woodwind, and then whatever else I want to have right now. So there's always cards like moving in and out of the deck depending on what I feel like playing that week or that month or something.
So, and I think you're running Pact of Negation and Force of Will and stuff, but I think it's actually a deck that if you wanted to build it, you could build it relatively cheap.
Yeah. I think the most important, really expensive card is probably Sword of Feast and Famine, because that's such a disgusting. For those of you at home who hasn't lost to it yet, it's an equipment for 3, and a good creature gets +2/+2, and has protection from black and from green. And whenever equipped creature deals combat damage to a player, that player discards a card, and you untap all lands you control, which is like It's so disgusting. Because you can do things like you can tap out or almost tap out to play like Jace the Mind Sculptor or a Consecrated Sphinx, and then you just swing with something with a sword and you untap everything and have the counter magic ready for whenever people try to deal with whatever you played. And you don't really have to have it, but it's like it's so good you probably should have it, even if you're going budget and even if you're going like the cheapest version you can get. You should probably save to get one of these cards for your staple binder or something.
They're about $15 at the moment, sort of FNF.
Yeah.
So actually, of the sword cycle, they're one of the cheapest. The second cheapest sword, amazingly, even though it's the best card in Commander from the five swords.
Yeah.
And I would argue the most expensive sword is probably the worst in Commander, which is Fire and Ice.
Yeah, I run that too because I get to draw extra cards. But
I can hear people shouting at me for saying that's a bad card. But I didn't say it was a bad card. I just said it was.
I use it mainly because it gets protection from blue. So usually all the flyers are blue or black, it happens too. But protection from blue on a flying creature is really good, and Woodwind likes protection from blue too. To get her through and onto the player instead of into another creature.
So check out Robin's Widwin deck. It is a very different deck. You don't see many things like it out there. It's a different way of playing Voltron as well.
Yeah, I think it's good fun, actually. It's not many people expect it. Nobody expects the Dimir Voltron, so to speak.
No. No, they don't. So my favourite Dimir commander, and I've spoken about him on the show many times, and I've never spoken about him in any kind of real depth other than saying this is a great card and I do abusive things with him, but he's the boss of the guild, Lazav Dimir Mastermind. He's 2 blue and 2 black for a legendary creature shapeshifter. He has hexproof. He's a 3/3, and he also has, whenever a creature card is put into an opponent's graveyard from anywhere, you may have Lazav Dimir Mastermind become a copy of that card, except it is still Lazav Dimir Mastermind, it is legendary in addition to its other types, and it gains hexproof and this ability. So he literally just gains all the abilities and power and toughness of the creature and its creature type.
I mean, this is so good. I used to play this too for a while. Before I actually rebuilt my Lazav deck into the Widwin deck, the first version of it. But I thought it was... I mean, he's really fun to play, and built-in hexproof is so good in a commander. But
the hexproof is sensational.
Yeah, it's... I mean, my other main deck right now is Ojutai, the Dragonlord Ojutai, and he only has hexproof when he's untapped, but that's still really, really powerful in a commander. So, I mean, I get that, but to me... Lazav was too clunky. I couldn't find the right amount of spells to mill your opponent, spells to control your opponent's spells to impact the board or impact your opponent's libraries or graveyard. So I couldn't really figure it out and get him to work. But I mean, I played against your deck, I think, and I thought it was pretty cool when I did. So I understand entirely your point. I do sincerely disagree, though.
So, what he's very, very good at. So, the hexproof is very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
The aim of it is, because I've been told mill decks don't work in Commander. They don't to take out 3 or 4 opponents unless you're building something that goes sort of infinite mana Una, like we've already discussed.
Yeah, or Sharoom or anything like that.
So. Yeah. So what you do with the Zav is you pick that guy that's playing with Boros Angels or, you know, the big creature deck, and you just hit them with every mill spell you can whilst Lazav's on the table and turn him into some horrendous death beast. Now, in my meta in particular, it seems like every game at least 2 people are playing with Avacyn. So you can legitimately, with a couple of mana rocks, I've had a turn 3 hexproof Avacyn on the table before. Who is still my commander.
And still dealing commander damage to people.
Is still dealing commander damage. I had one person laugh at me as Adler's Av out, as I was milling the crap out of them. Ha 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 ha, I've got an Ulamog in here just to stop me being milled. That's grand. I'll have the hexproof indestructible 10-10 commando with Annihilator 4 then. Because Ulamog still hits the graveyard before he shuffles himself away into the deck. It's like, okay, I've now got just a death beast on the table. And then you run Thassa and stuff like that in your deck to give him unblockable if he needs it. But what you do if someone's not running as Eldrazi, you get Lazav killing someone with commander damage. You get your other big, powerful Dimir creatures like Consuming Aberration, etc., that are keying off you milling someone to kill them with damage, sort of regular combat damage, and you mill out the other players. So you have to kind of apply three different strategies all at once.
Yeah. To me, that got messy. It got confusing to me. But it's really cool. And what I like about the commander especially is that he's only as good as the cards that your opponents are playing. So you can probably build a Lazav deck that can be played in like a pretty casual setting with a bunch of people who just got into the format or playing with pre-constructed decks or something, and you can play the same Lazav deck almost entirely in a more competitive environment with more like die-hard cutthroat players as well, because they will have better creatures for you to steal with your commander.
Yep, it's so he does scale up with the meta very nicely.
It's very
nice. If he doesn't, if he's playing against opponents that aren't using anything particularly snacky as creatures, just don't cast him. There's been plenty of times I've not cast him. Or you cast him and you try and kill some utility creature that's got an activated ability, or he used to enjoy being a prophet at Crucifix. take a drink.
Yeah, I could do that.
And yeah, so I will put my deck, my current deck, because it's like your Widwin deck, it's my deck that keeps evolving. Consuming Aberration is a key spell in the deck. Altar of Dementia, which is a 2-drop artifact. You can sacrifice a creature. Target player puts the top X cards of their library into their graveyard, where X is the sacrifice creature's toughness. You can one-shot kill someone with a Consuming Aberration if you do that correctly.
Yeah.
And you get clones and stuff in your deck as well, so you can clone the consumer and just say, right, well, how many cards have you got in your library? There's more cards. My Consuming Aberration is higher power. So I have said to people before, okay, you're now my... I can kill you at instant speed. So, do you want to continue playing this game of Magic? Yes, right, you're now my pawn.
So it's a 2v1v1 game from there.
And, yep, that happens more often than you think. People will say, well, I'm still enjoying this game, so yeah, sure, why not? Now, you have to hold a counter spell back for the Crozan Grip.
Yeah. But you can't do that.
But you can't counter the Crozan Grip, so you have to be careful of the Crozan Grip. But, you know.
You hold a counter spell for the Glamour or the Disenchant or the other card that comes...
Well, I mean, if they're gonna, if you're holding player A, player one to ransom, and player two tries to deglamour your beast within your Altar of Dementia, that's when you kill player one.
Yeah.
Because player one is going to be seriously, seriously.
Do you run do you run Mesmeric Orb in your deck?
Oh, of course, I run Mesmeric Orb in my deck. So you mill yourself a bit with Mesmeric Orb, and then there's this really great 50p, if it's even that, card called Psychic Spiral. Do you know this card?
Never heard of that card.
Oh, sir. Right. So if you're milling yourself, and it's a deck that you're trying to mill your opponents, but there's great cards like Dreamborn Muse and Mesmeric Orb are two brilliant examples. And they mill you as well as your opponents. You're a little bit concerned about that. Psychic Spiral reads, 4 and a blue for an instant. Shuffle all cards from your graveyard into your library, and target player puts that many cards from the top of their library into their graveyard.
I actually do know this card because my friend used to play it in Mizzix.
It's a good one in Mizzix as well, yeah. So, yeah, you mill yourself a bit and then just go, vroom, gotcha. One person's going to die. Somebody once, he doesn't listen to the show, but someone in my paper meta, what's the hinder? Hinder, the counter spell that tucks a spell. So he hindered my Psychic Spiral It's tucked on the bottom of my deck. So, okay, no problem at all. Then he cast Tunnel Vision on me, naming Psychic, you know, going down to Psychic Spiral. I was like, are you sure?
Why would you do that?
He said, yeah, I am. Yeah, teach you to try and do this. I was like, okay, my turn. I'm going to draw Psychic Spiral. You're dead.
Wow.
Yeah. Bravo. It's like if there were a Darwin Awards of magic, that would be the winner that year.
Anytime if you're playing magic and your opponent asks you, are you sure? Maybe you might want to reconsider the play.
Yeah. Have you thought about this entirely? Really? But anyway, that's Lazav. So he's my kind of deck because he's not super obvious. And he does scale up to how good your opponent's decks are. And he does test your brain on how to win.
He's very demure, right? He's really, really demure.
Yeah, he can win from nowhere. And you just have to constantly be thinking ahead, right, what do I need to do to engineer this situation? If you can get Lazav to be cloning any creature that gives you haste, Rise of the Dark Realms will win you a game pretty fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you try and get those Urabrasks into a graveyard. Yeah. Anyway.
Such a cool card.
He is a very, very cool card. Should we quickly discuss the two Planeswalkers that are in these colours?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so there have only ever been two Planeswalkers that are exclusively blue-black. We'll start with arguably the best, but also arguably the worst of them, Tezzeret, Agent of Bolas, who I've just realised has become a $37 card.
Jeez, that's modern for you, right?
Jeez Louise, God. I'm pleased I own about three of them.
Yeah, I don't have any of those, so...
Okay, well, I'll read him quickly. He's two, a blue and a black, for a Planeswalker Tezzeret, enters the battlefield loyalty 3. His plus one, look at the top 5 cards of your library. You may reveal an artifact card from among them and put it into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. Minus one, target artifact becomes a 5/5 artifact creature. That doesn't end at the end of the turn, it just becomes that. Minus four, so you can get this ultimate pretty quickly. Target player loses X life and you gain X life where X is twice the number of artifacts you control. He's okay.
Yeah, I mean, you can win some games with this card quite easily.
I've won using a Mycosynth Lattice in this before.
Yeah, I can see that. I really like how, as you said, the minus one, importantly, doesn't end at the end of the turn. That's really cool. And also, that's like, because blue and black are colors that might have some issues dealing with artifacts, but they have no issues dealing with creatures. So you can actually animate... And another player's artifact that's really annoying you, like a Meek Stone or something, and then they just kill it with like a Hero's Downfall or whatever removal spell you have. Anything.
Anything you want, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is a very demure way of using that card.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good out to some of these situations. It's always good to be flexible in Commander, so...
I'll tell you what, though, I would not pay $37 for that unless I desperately needed it for a dedicated artifact deck.
Yeah. I mean, if you're playing Modern, fine. You shouldn't, but if you are, fine.
Would you like to read our second Dimir Planeswalker?
I can, yes. He or she, if there's something...
It, yeah.
Is called Ashiok Nightmare Weaver. For one, a blue and a black. Enters the battlefield with 3 counters. The plus 2 is exile the top 3 cards of target opponent's library. The minus X second ability is put a creature card with converted mana cost X exiled with Ashok Nightmare Weaver onto the battlefield under your control. That creature is a nightmare in addition to its other types. And the ultimate is minus 10, exile all cards from all opponent's hands and graveyards. So you added to crisis the entire table aside from you. Obviously disgusting. I mean, the card is 3 mana. It is 3 mana. So,
it's pretty nice when you cast it, plus 2 it, and you get, you know, like some really powerful cards off your opponent's deck, even if it's card non-creatures, so you're not going to be able to cast them.
Yeah.
But you've got, I don't know, to pick some really powerful sorcery or something, and you've exiled it. It's gone.
Yeah, that's good.
And it comes down at +2, puts it on 5 straight away for a 3-mana planeswalker, so you can get it early game.
And I mean, it's quite innocent. People are probably not going to waste like your Hero's Downfall or something on it. People are not, probably not going to attack it too much. So if you can protect it, you might as well just try and find a good creature. And if you do, you can always cast it. It's, I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, and there for a planeswalker, this is relatively cheap. Ashiok is only $8. $8 is for a planeswalker is cheap.
Yeah. It's only printed once too, so has only printed once too.
Theros block.
What is the character supposed to be anyway? Is it supposed to be like a humanoid? Is it supposed to be like
Ashiok was the little we know about Ashiok drawn to Theros because Theros was a plane of inspiration and light and devotion.
Mm-hmm.
And wanted to take all those hopeful dreams and stuff and turn them into nightmares. And Ashiok made a deal with Phoenix, the Dimir god, ironically, to essentially trick all the believers in Theros into believing that Ashiok was a god.
Mm-hmm.
And not with the intention of Ashiok ascending to be a planeswalker or a god or whatever Xehanort wanted, but rather to just corrupt on a massive scale. All the hopeful, turn all the dreams, the shiny dreams, into dark nightmares and take over the plane that way. No one knows where Ashiok came from or went, but Ashiok was eventually dispelled when Heliod, the light of Heliod, god of the sun, sort of took over again, and Ashiok disappeared off into the blind eternities. I think Ashiok has potential to. Oh, the more Ashiok used its magic, the more it turned to that shadowy stuff. If you look at the art, half of its face is missing, and there's just sort of a shadowy gate.
Yeah.
Where the top half of its face, and Ashiok was slowly turning into that the more magic it used.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's really cool that Wizards is somehow adding these characters to represent people who aren't necessarily heterosexual, male or female, white people. Alesha, for example, is another card that's representing parts of the community that actually exist but haven't really had any representation within the game. So I think it's really cool that Ashiok exists in the game, but I think it's a shame that Ashiok hasn't had more of a presence in the storyline or in the other sets.
Well, I think there's hope for Ashiok to turn up in the future. I don't think that Ashiok's going to be like Ral Zarek and only be in one place.
Yeah.
Despite being a planeswalker, only be very, very heavily linked to a Ravnican guild.
Yeah.
I think Ashiok is a wanderer through existence.
Yeah, finding all the nightmares.
Speaking of diversity, so Chandra is essentially Indian. Kaladesh is meant to be an Indian-influenced plane,
yeah,
in the same way Theros was Greek. I don't know if they've retconned that, because I'm guessing people would have gone, oh, white, heterosexual female character. But I think it's pretty cool that they're giving different planes different cultural identities, if not ethnic identities.
I'm really looking forward to Kaladesh for the Indian influences. The artwork for the new planeswalker, I don't recall her name right now, though.
Saheeli Rai.
Looks really cool. Seems like a sweet, sweet place to be. And what we saw in Magic Origins was pretty cool from Chandra's homeworld. So I'm just waiting for them to make a Nordic set some point in the future.
Yeah, you had Ice Age. That had some Nordic stuff.
Yeah, with all the snow. And that's all there is to the Nordic countries. Might be that it's only like a bunch of Vikings running around with berserking all over the place. So it might be a bit stereotypical. We'll see. But I'm hoping they will do a Nordic theme sets at some point in the future.
I've watched the films. Nordic culture is you worship space aliens who are gods of the Nine Realms. Is that right?
Well,
And Sir Anthony Hopkins is your leader.
No,
I've got that wrong. The films have lied to me, you're saying?
Yeah, films have lied to you.
So, Welsh Sir Anthony Hopkins, Australian son.
What I like about the Nordic gods is that they are, in essence, all lunatics, basically. Because, as one of your countrymen actually said in his... do you know Zero Punctuation, the online review show?
I am aware of Zero Punctuation. Yeah. Is that, he was part of The Escapist as well,
yeah,
wasn't he?
Yeah, exactly. Ben Crenshaw. Yeah, yeah. He puts it nicely in his Too Human review, I think it was, when he said that, like, the Christian God, it can be hard to look upon the world as if you have an all-caring, inherently good God when so much happens all the time. Like, why did little Timmy get run over by the combine harvester if God is in essence good?
Yeah, if God is all-loving and benevolent.
Yeah, but when your gods are basically one-eyed old men who transform their genitals into fruit trees and get drunk all the time, then you might understand why the world is such a toot place. And I mean, I can sign off on that as well. It gives you... I'm not really a believer in the old Norse mythology things, but I think parts of the stories are quite cool, actually. I like teaching them at work.
Well, in England, we gave up on all our gods a long time ago.
Well, your gods were essentially our gods for a great part of history, actually, if we're supposed to talk about our colonial pasts. Well, not Sweden, but I suppose Denmark, yeah.
Speaking of former colonies of this great country, our American hosts, I wonder how they're doing at GP LA.
Yeah, we're all sitting here very jealous not being there.
Look, I've told you, Pan-European Alliance... If you think, right, with England's stiff upper lip and Sweden's beautiful blonde people, there's no way we can't retake that country.
Yeah, yeah, true. We should probably. If you look at their presidential race, oh, sorry, no politics, but just...
Oh, that's all right. American politics isn't really politics. It's more like a bizarre sitcom that might kill us all one day.
Very true.
As long as they don't vote some smoke-haired, lunatic, right-wing nutjob who believes that Muslims are second-class citizens into power, we'll be fine.
Yeah, as long as. So, America, this is your IQ test. Don't fail us, please.
Oh, God. Think. Oh.
Yeah, I don't want to think, actually. It's going to be an exciting fall.
Look, I'll put it this way, right? When English Prime Minister David Cameron, who is a grade A... is saying that he thinks your potential president is, how do we put it mildly, a touch dodgy... You know you're in Syria. He will make deals with anyone, any human rights abusing leader, as long as it allows England to sell arms to you. He'll do it. But when he's going, not sure about this Trump fella. Yeah. Warning to you all. Warning.
Yeah.
Not the week. I mean, if you're a Trump supporter and you listen to our show, good on you. But yeah, there you go. We could say some other things. Ban guns. What else is going to get people off our show?
You know, social security is very effective when it's managed by the state. Free healthcare is pretty cool.
Hey, Robin, if I come over to your country or you come to my country and I get one of my guns, which I'm not allowed to carry, and shoot you in the leg... How much is it going to cost you to get that bullet wound fixed?
Nothing. Not a single penny.
No pounds. Euros? Do you have euros where you are?
No. We have the Swedish krona.
Krona?
Yeah, or crown. You can call it crown.
That's fine. Krona's fine.
Yeah, we actually voted no on the joining with the euro, which I think is probably good. But we don't have to get into complicated politics.
Look, so England was the same.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. We both made the right choice, I think.
So if you're a listener and you feel strongly that England and Sweden should be in the single Eurozone currency, well, yeah, good for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, we've gone well deep into this rabbit hole. So, Robin, I think there's an important message here. And that message is, we love our listeners.
Of course.
Before we love them, we'd like to point you to our Patreon account. Now, I won't do this for long because I'm not very good at selling things. Because when English people sell things, we just sound insincere and vaguely pissed off. But we have a Patreon account. We have some cool prizes where you can still enjoy everything we do on the shows, on the main show, if you don't want to or can't afford to donate. And we understand that position entirely. But if you can spare a buck a show or a little bit more, we'd gladly appreciate it. And it allows us to keep bringing you more and more content and improve our audio quality. And hey, provide you guys with cool prizes, and those booster packs we give out, they don't come for free. I'm starting to see, this is what I mean, I'm starting to sound threatening now.
So it's a really good podcast you got there. Too bad if anything happened to it. I'm a patron though, so I think, yeah, I've got it made for myself. I wholeheartedly encourage anybody to actually help out with the show.
So yeah, head over to our Patreon account, which if you go into Patreon and look up Commander and MTG, you'll find it pretty quickly, or go onto our website, which is at commanderandmtg.com, or follow us on all the usual social media. You can, we'll link to our Patreon account there. But we still love our listeners, all of you. You're fun, you tell us what you think, we get to playtest with you, and please take the time to contact us. And if you really like us, or even if you don't really like us, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. I've not checked in a while, but some of you led some hilariously abusive things and still gave us 5 stars, so makes me smile. And it lets people say, hey, look at that. They've got 5-star ratings and they get to give us cool things like, oh, I don't know, maybe one day spoilers and things. We'll see. I should let you know that our theme song was created for the podcast by Nate Burgess. Yeah, I know. Our logo was created for the podcast by MrPicto.co.uk with assistance from Kelly DeLuca. Special thanks to our tech whizzes, Jesse Thompson and Graham Frank, and to Justin for his spurversace, which is a lot like server space. You can reach us by going to our, I've already said that bit, but you know, our email is cast@commanderandmtg.com. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, mtgcast.com, Podbay FM, Reddit, always by searching Commander and MTG Podcast. On Twitter individually, I am at Copain26. Phil is at KetJack. And Nate is at Mr. Plorg. Mm-hmm. Robin, how can people get you on Twitter?
I am at Robin _ Kaas, KAAS.
That's Robin spelled ROBIN.
Yeah, exactly. And nothing else.
And Robin, if you could just say how we sign off every episode.
And that's our show.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Dragonlord Silumgar.
I don't mind stealing threats from the boards of my opponent. And I can't take from the powerless, cause they got nothing for me to steal. If it's on the table, you got me looking. If it's in the graveyard, then Lazavi's cooking. If it's in the library, bribery searching. Cause I'm ill in libraries. Cause I'm ill in libraries. Cause I'm ill in libraries.